Omaha Public Radio presents another program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Leo Biga, author of Alexander Payne, His Journey in Film, and co-editor of Memories of the Jewish Midwest, Mom and Pop Grocery Stores. The topic of his talk will be Nebraska's Film Heritage. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, February 17, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Durham Museum, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Mick Hale, former Director of Education at the Durham Museum.
Our special guest, Leo Biga, is a local well-known author. I'm calling him an expert on Hollywood and film because I've seen his outline, and it's absolutely amazing. You're going to get quite the lesson tonight from Leo on Nebraska's film heritage. So again, with that, thank you very much for coming out. And I also want to say thank you to Leo. We got the opportunity this past fall to meet Leo, very passionate, very knowledgeable. And as I said, you are going to enjoy this evening's program. So with that, I turn it over to our special guest, Leo Biga.
Thanks, Mick. Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming out on this bitterly cold night. I've been a film buff from a young age, and I was always intrigued from a very young age when I was first getting into movies to find out some of the Nebraska connections to Hollywood. And I don't claim to be an expert, by the way, in film at all. But I am passionate about the subject, for sure, and I do write a fair amount about it. And the more I've, cultivated this interest about Nebraskans in film, I keep finding more and more Native Nebraskans or transplants to Nebraska who have been active in the film industry and are still active in the film industry. And it's a rather amazing aggregate of people. It's far more than any of us realize. It's many hundreds, many hundreds, past and present. And their contributions to the film industry, cross the gamut of every aspect of filmmaking. And of course, it goes far beyond just film itself. It goes into television and other mediums as well. And so their contributions are behind the camera and in front of the camera. And you'll know some of these figures' names for sure that I'm going to reference tonight. And I could reference easily, 10 times the number that I'm going to be mentioning this evening. I'll also be talking a bit about not just people who've come here to work in the film industry as actors or actresses or as directors or directors of cinematography or whatever it might be, but also talk about some of the films that have been made here that have some significance, at least in my mind, and maybe talk a bit about some of the films that have had their premieres here. And as the World Herald recently pointed out, when you say the word premiere or world premiere, it kind of depends on what you're talking about. But there have been a few genuine world premieres here and a lot of other premieres, which means that a lot of times films may have opened here the same weekend they opened in New York or Los Angeles. I'm basically just wanting to give you an appreciation for what I call Nebraska's film heritage. And this is what I'm beginning to call a project. And ultimately, I'd like this project to result in a book, at least, perhaps a website preceding the book, and perhaps even a documentary at some point that kind of charts this rich film heritage, film legacy of Nebraska. There's a name that most of you are likely familiar with, Daryl Zanuck. Wahoo native Daryl Zanuck rode his calculated ambition, raw nerve, incisive vision, and modest writing talent into a Hollywood career that saw him move from Mack Sennett gag writer to Warner Brothers staff writer overseeing the Rin Tin Tin series, then production chief, all by age 27. He helped usher in the sound era in Hollywood by supervising the jazz singer. He helped craft the Warner's brand during its 1930s talkies heyday, when the studio famously capitalized on Depression-era social themes and issues through hard-hitting gangster and musical pictures. Then he formed his own production company and allied it with the old Fox studio. And by the end of the 1930s, 20th Century Fox became a major player, and Zanuck embodied everything we associate with a movie mogul, good and bad. Under his czardom, many iconic movies got made, so did a lot of forgettable ones. He brought his 1944 pet project, Wilson, to his hometown of Wahoo for a world premiere. The movie didn't go over well here or anywhere else. A later pet project, The Longest Day, was a triumph, however. His last years in Hollywood in the 1960s were uneasy ones as he tried adjusting to a radically changing industry and culture. Harold Lloyd, born in Burchard, Nebraska, he worked his way into silent movies by 1919. His career took off under Hal Roach, but Lloyd eventually produced the films he starred in. During the height of the silent comedy period, he was part of the great trio, along with Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. Reportedly, his films outgrossed theirs. He was a major box office draw and one of the era's highest paid stars. Lloyd was one of the first filmmakers to preview his comedies to a test audience, reshooting and editing based on the feedback. Before unions, he paid his crew year-round, even when inactive. His transition to talkies initially succeeded, but by the end of the 30s, he was left behind by changing times and tastes. He's been rediscovered in recent years, and appreciation for his work is perhaps at an all-time high. I'm turning next to another legacy, which some of you may know about, but likely most of you don't. In 1916, Omaha brothers George and Noble Johnson formed what's considered the first African-American owned and operated movie production outfit, the Lincoln Motion Picture Company, or Lincoln Film Company. The Johnsons were not originally from Nebraska. They grew up in an entrepreneurial family and pursued opportunities where they found them. That spirit led them to Omaha at a certain point, where they were living when D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation came out. And apparently, its highly negative depiction of African Americans motivated the brothers to offer a counter-narrative on screen through films that they produced themselves. The Johnsons soon relocated to Los Angeles, where the so-called race films they produced portrayed African Americans in a positive light. It's unlikely the brothers made any of their films in Nebraska before they moved west. Their first film was released in 1916, and like their subsequent efforts, it showed at black churches, schools, and theaters. Although their company had a short run, the Johnsons more than qualify as black cinema pioneers for taking the filmmaking apparatus into their own hands in order to create these positive images. Here's a name that I'm sure all of you are familiar with. The singing and dancing talents of siblings Fred and Adele Astaire emerged as young children in Omaha, where their father worked for Storrs Brewing Company. Art Storrs Jr. told me that as kids, the Astaires danced in the ballroom of the Storrs Mansion on Farnham Street. Fred and Adele became a successful vaudeville team, and they took their act to Broadway and London, where they became major stars. Fred was brought out to Hollywood for a screen test that legend has it was a disaster, but from the very start, he proved to be pure magic on screen, as we all know by now. His pairings with Ginger Rogers proved especially popular and became instant classics. He later proved himself a fine dramatic actor, but he's best remembered as the screen's most graceful dancer and one of popular music's best song interpreters. This is one of my favorite figures from Omaha that most of us probably aren't very familiar with. I only became aware of her within the last decade. Ann Rennell, Omaha native, Central High School graduate. Her songwriting skills made her a Tin Pan Alley, Broadway, and Hollywood name in the male-dominated field of composing. Her collaborators and friends included such legends as George Gershwin, Lott Lenny, Kurt Weill, and Leonard Bernstein. She worked with the Walt Disney Studio. She married Hollywood producer Lester Cohen and contributed music to several of his pictures. That was one of her best known tunes, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? She was the first woman to compose scores for Hollywood feature films, films such as Algiers, One Touch of Venus, and to write both words and music for a Broadway musical, Count Me In, and earned Oscar nominations for Best Song, Linda, and Best Score for the story of G.I. Joe. She wrote songs for films as diverse as Jean Renoir's The River and the John Wayne Western Hondo. She is best known for the bluesy standard Willow Weep For Me and the novelty Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Let's see, I bet none of you have ever heard of this guy. So, you know, there's not much more left to be said about someone like Henry Fonda. You know, for all the fame that he gained on stage and screen, the thing that has always most impressed me, I mean, besides his acting talent, is that he never forgot his ties to Grand Island and Omaha, and he always maintained a close relationship with the place he got his acting start at, the Omaha Community Playhouse. The Central High and Playhouse graduate came back twice to act at the theater, once to star opposite promising newcomer Dorothy McGuire in A Kiss for Cinderella, and many years later to star with her again in The Country Girl for a 1955 benefit production that co-starred Henry's ingenue daughter, Jane. His indelible performances in classic films are part of cinema history. In 1981, this actor's actor came back a final time for a Playhouse tribute program in his honor. In 1982, Jane appeared at an Omaha Orpheum Theater premiere of On Golden Pond, the only film she made with her father, and the role that won him an Oscar. Dorothy McGuire, you know, what are the odds that the same community theater would, in the space of a few years, produce two major stage and screen stars such as these? First, there was Henry, followed fairly closely by Dorothy. Her name is often obscured by her Hollywood contemporaries, but her work from the early 1940s through the early 1960s compares with any of theirs, in my opinion. She held her own with some of the strongest male stars of her era, Gregory Peck, Lloyd Nolan, Robert Mitchum, Burt Lancaster, Gary Cooper, Robert Preston. Her work in A Tree Grows in Brooklyn under Elia Kazan is timeless, in my opinion. If you've never seen Claudia and its sequel, Claudia and David, I highly recommend them. And she shows serious dramatic depth in Dark at the Top of the Stairs. And like Fonda, she maintained great loyalty to both Omaha and the Playhouse. So I know for me, Marlon Brando had a tremendous impact on me as a young boy when I first saw On the Waterfront. There was just something about that film and something about his performance that really affected me. And I think I actually trace my fascination with film from that moment. I remember watching it on television at home, and it just did something to me. And I've never quite been the same again. So in Brando, you know, Nebraska can claim an artist who is often said, you know, changed the face of screen acting. the Omaha native whose mother, Dottie, was active at the Playhouse and, in fact, encouraged young Henry Fonda to start there, brought method acting into the mainstream with his sense memory-driven performances. His work in A Streetcar Named Desire and On the Waterfront remain, to many tastes, unsurpassed. Forever a rebel, Brando fell out of disfavor with the studios at a certain point. Even though there's a school of thought that he frittered away his talent, I argue he did some of his best work his last 30 years, including One-Eyed Jax, which he also directed, Reflections in a Golden Eye, and a film called Burn. Of course, his so-called comeback in The Godfather was much lauded. As was his performance in Last Tango in Paris. But some fans and critics can't seem to look past the personal problems and obesity that marked some of his later years to see the brilliance of his work in films like Apocalypse Now, The Freshman, and Don Juan DeMarco.
You spend time with your family?
Sure I do.
Good. Because a man that doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man. You look terrible. I want you to eat. I want you to rest well, and a month from now, this Hollywood big shot's gonna give you what you want.
It's too late. They start shooting in a week.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with this name, Lynn Stallmaster, one of Hollywood's greatest casting directors. He's from a prominent Omaha family, now retired. He helped discover many stars and did lead casting on many iconic films by top directors. Just a few of his credits: Judgment at Nuremberg, The Greatest Story Ever Told, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, The Fortune Cookie, In the Heat of the Night, They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, Fiddler on the Roof, Harold and Maude, The Cowboys, Deliverance, Jeremiah Johnson, Coming Home. Lynn, by the way, is still very much alive. I hope to interview him sometime before the end of the year. James Coburn is certainly someone I like many of the people who are deceased as part of this tribute program, I wish I could have interviewed. A Laurel, Nebraska native. To my mind, he was a rebel figure in a long line of Hollywood bad boys and cool cats. Though never a megastar on par with contemporaries Paul Newman and Steve McQueen, he was every bit their equal as an actor. He is a charismatic, scene-stealing character player you can't take your eyes off, regardless of who he's sharing the screen with. He got a few starring turns during his career, but is best remembered as a riveting supporting player in the tradition of maybe a Thomas Mitchell or a Walter Brennan. In one of his last roles, he teamed with fellow Nebraska native and rebel figure Nick Nolte in the searing drama Afflicted, written and directed by Paul Schrader. Both were nominated for Oscars. That is, both Coburn and Nolte, and Coburn won in the supporting category. Sandy Dennis was born in Hastings. She grew up there in Kennesaw and in Lincoln, where her family moved when she was 9. She graduated from Lincoln High, where her classmates included Dick Cavett and Roger Welsh. And Dick Cavett has told me and others that he had a crush on and Sandy, and he didn't have the courage to do anything about it. She briefly attended the University of Nebraska before heading east. Within a decade, she was a star of Broadway, winning back-to-back Tony Awards, and a star of film, winning an Oscar. She later won a Golden Globe. She often went back and forth between the stage and screen, and she's one of the few film artists from Nebraska who ever returned here to make a film. Sean Penn's The Indian Runner, a very small part. This woman is someone I almost always use as an example of how a lot of Nebraska film heritage has been neglected. Joan Micklin Silver, an Omaha native, a Central High grad, worked in theater, and I believe in public television in Cleveland, before selling her first screenplay to Hollywood. She did not like what Mark Robson did with her script, which was made into the feature Limbo, but she learned about filmmaking on the set from him. Her debut feature as writer-director, Hester Street, was an independent hit and earned star Carol Kane a Best Actress Oscar nomination. Silver followed that with Between the Lines and Chilly Scenes of Winter, along the way becoming one of only a handful of American women feature directors in that era. Her best-known work, Crossing Delancey, is a romantic comedy gem, one of my personal favorites. The longtime New York resident directed many movies for cable networks, and lately she had been working on a pair of documentaries, one about the bagel as an immigrant story to America, and the other about the Catskills. I was very recently in correspondence with Joan. I've interviewed her many times over the years, done a lot of writing about her. She lost her husband, Raphael, or Ray, recently, and she doesn't feel like she can go on with those two documentary projects, at least for the time being. It's too sad for her. She said she may pick them up again at another time. I also learned that an author is in the process of preparing a biography about her, which I'm very glad to hear because she certainly deserves it. She really broke down barriers for women in film, and she's a very important figure. In fact, I would argue she's the most important film figure ever from Nebraska. As good as Alexander Payne is, and you know, I have a book about him right over there. you know, he hasn't done what she's done, and she's held in very high regard by her peers. And if you don't know her work, I urge you to seek it out. Hester Street, Between the Lines, Chilly Scenes of Winter, Crossing Delancey, and many more. Bad boy Nick Nolte was born and raised in Omaha, went to Benson and Westside, got in trouble with the law, and left here to do his on-the-road thing. He earned his acting chops in regional theater before being discovered by television and film producers. He fit perfectly the anti-hero leading men movement of the 1970s and 80s and quickly became one of cinema's most powerful personas. He's an interesting combination, purely my opinion, of Henry Fonda and Marlon Brando, with a touch of James Coburn thrown in. He's never won a competitive Oscar, but I predict he'll at least receive an honorary Academy Award for his stellar body of work before all is said and done. If not, he certainly deserves to. Another person that I've been trying to get an interview with for a long time, I'm not giving up. This is another gentleman I've been trying to make contact with. Omaha native Paul Williams has acted, composed, and sung for movies and television in a career that's a half century in the making. He won a Grammy and an Oscar for writing the lyrics to the monster hit song Evergreen, and he was nominated for an Oscar for his score to Phantom of the Paradise. He's won two more Grammys, two Golden Globes, and earned induction into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. His songs, We've Only Just Begun, Rainy Days and Mondays, You and Me Against the World, An Old-Fashioned Love Song, Let Me Be the One, and The Rainbow Connection are standards in a lot of people's opinions. He's president and chairman of the board of the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, ASCAP, today. And he was the subject of a documentary film that came out a couple years ago, which I have not seen. Well, I had to mention Alexander Payne at some point. He's certainly been the film figure who's had most of my attention the last many years. I've said it before, but as good as Alexander Payne's first 20 years as a feature filmmaker have been, I believe the best is yet to come. The Omaha native is firmly established as one of world cinema's leading artists after only six films. I believe his Nebraska was his best work yet, and I fully expect we'll see him continue to stretch and grow his visual and storytelling palette. Outside of Daryl Zanuck, Payne's probably the most significant behind-the-scenes film artist to come from Nebraska in terms of the sheer reach of his work. In the tradition of Henry Fonda, he's one of the only major film artists from Nebraska who's retained ongoing close ties to his hometown and home state. And, of course, he's actually taken things further than Fonda did by repeatedly bringing the Hollywood industry to Nebraska via the films he makes here and the peers he invites here for film streams, fundraising events. This is a gentleman I just recently discovered. And I'll bet no one in this room, except perhaps Mike Hill and Mara Fiore, if they're here, has heard of Donald Thorne. Yet this Omaha native who lived here, perhaps into his early 20s, was one of American cinema's leading camera operators and then directors of photography from the early 1970s through the 1990s and beyond. He worked his way up in Hollywood the classic way, in the mailroom at 20th Century Fox, then moved to the camera department. He went from camera loader to camera assistant to camera operator to director of photography. As camera operator, he worked with such directors as Cassavetes, Scorsese, Ashby, Allen, and Pakula, and cinematographers Haskell Wexler and Gordon Willis. The films he lit included Michael Mann's Thief, which is one of my personal favorites, starring James Caan, Taylor Hackford's An Officer and a Gentleman, and Against All Odds, Purple Rain, and I'm trying to follow my own notes here, Midnight Run with Robert De Niro, Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino. He's retired now. He's in his early 80s, and I will be interviewing him this spring about his remarkable career. And by the way, I just found out that he and Joan Micklin Silver were classmates at Central High. And she's well aware of his body of work. And she wanted me to wish him well the next time I talk with him. Before I get to Gabriel Union, I just wanted to mention a little bit more about someone I just referenced, Mike Hill, a film editor from Omaha. He got his start editing in Omaha television before he went to California and fell into an apprentice job at Paramount. And like Donald Thorne, who I was just featuring a few moments before, he worked his way up from the bottom, delivering film, then helping out in cutting TV series, before landing with two major film directors, the legendary Elia Kazan and Hal Ashby, who mentored him. He assisted Kazan in cutting The Last Tycoon and assisted Hal Ashby on Bound for Glory. That experience propelled him into a career as a film editor, eventually working with Dan Hanley on all of Ron Howard's features. Hill and Hanley shared an Oscar for Apollo 13. Mike recently announced his retirement after completing the edit on Howard's new film, In the Heart of the Sea, and Mike's always maintained an Omaha residence. So Mike Hill is one of three Oscar winners who reside in Omaha. There's Mike Hill, there's the cinematographer Mauro Fiore, originally from Italy, who married an Omaha girl and won the Oscar for Avatar, and of course there's Alexander Payne. I assume that at least some of you are familiar with Gabriel Union, one of Black Hollywood's biggest stars. Omaha native, she's also found crossover success in mainstream film, television, and advertising. She's the star of BET's hit drama, Being Mary Jane, and she recently produced her first movie, With This Ring, for Lifetime. She was introduced to a new audience when she served as one of the celebrity advocates for the acclaimed PBS documentary, Half the Sky, which followed her travels to Vietnam to meet with young women facing hardships. Union's work as an actress and beauty spokesperson has helped expand the definition of beauty and glamour to include African-American women. Yolanda Ross, and I've written extensively about Gabrielle over the years, and also about Yolanda Ross, another Omaha native, who's made a lot of waves in film and television. Not as well known as Gabrielle, but she's a She's the real deal. Her work veers from indie art films to the recent Lifetime biopic Whitney. Yolanda is also a talent behind the camera, as she wrote, directed, produced, and starred in a short film, Breaking Night. She often gets back here and would one day like to make a film here. And some of you may remember her in the Denzel Washington film, Antoine Fisher. She had a telling role as the abusive aunt. Before I get to some of these movies, just a couple other figures I just wanted to briefly touch on. Monty Ross is one of my favorite Omaha film stories. I profiled him in The Reader, 8 or 9 years ago. He was Spike Lee's right-hand man for about the first 20 years of Spike Lee's career. Omaha North graduate. He went all the way back to Spike Lee's college filmmaking days. And in fact, he starred in Spike Lee's student thesis film, Joe's Bed-Stuy Barbershop, We Cut Heads, which I believe was nominated for an Oscar, a student Oscar. Through most of Spike Lee's breakthrough films, Monty served a variety of collaborative functions, mostly on the producing end, before the two parted ways a decade ago or so. Someone else that I should mention is Marg Helgenberger, a name that's familiar to most of you, I'm sure. Though she's never acted in a film or TV project in her home state, at least to my knowledge, she gets back here a lot. She's very much a Nebraska girl. She was born in Fremont and grew up in North Bend. And she became one of TV's leading ladies with her co-starring roles in China Beach and CSI. And she proved her mettle on the big screen, to my way of thinking, in Steven Soderbergh's Aaron Brockovich. Another figure that I've written a lot about in recent years is Nick Fackler. You may know the name. When he was still in his 20s, he did a rather remarkable thing. He attracted two Oscar-winning actors as the leads in his independent film, Lovely Still, which he made entirely in Omaha, his hometown. So to get Martin Landau and Alan Burstyn to star in your debut feature in a script that he originally wrote when he was in his late teens is to me a rather amazing accomplishment. If you've seen the film, I don't know how you feel about it. I think there's a lot of divided opinion about it. I'm a great champion of the film. Some people don't think so much of it. But I think it was a fine piece of work. Nick is one of the most interesting creative artists I've ever met. He still has not followed up that debut feature with a second dramatic feature, but he did make a feature documentary that came out in the last couple years, which was a very interesting piece of work. He went to Africa for that project, and then he also went to Nepal for another documentary project, which he has yet to complete. And he tells me that he's working on a science fiction feature script at this time, and he also completed a recent experimental short film. So I'm sure we'll be hearing from Nick in the future. It's just that he's a little distracted because he also has a music career. So I mentioned earlier some of the movies that have been made in Omaha of some significance. Certainly, Boys Town founder Father Edward Flanagan was a public relations genius. And his role in getting Hollywood's biggest studio at the time, MGM, to make a feature film about his boys' home says a lot. That film was partly shot in and around Boys Town and in downtown Omaha, and its success, including Spencer Tracy winning the Oscar for Best Actor, helped make the already famous institution a household name. The making of the film here drew lots of attention, but the film's world premiere at the Omaha Theater truly was a huge event that drew upwards of 30,000 or more people to see Tracy, Mickey Rooney, MGM Brass, Father Flanagan, and a bevy of local and state officials. The festivities were captured via print and newsreel, as well as a live national radio broadcast from the red carpet. Before I get to that film, One that I felt I needed to mention is a remarkable documentary that probably some of you have seen called A Time for Burning. It's one of the most powerful and enduring films about race relations in America, and it was made right here in Omaha in the 1960s by Bill Jersey and Barbara Cannell for Lutheran Film Services. A Time for Burning charts the upheaval that results when a progressive pastor at Augustana Lutheran Church puts in motion fellowship between his white congregation and neighboring black congregations. A young Ernie Chambers is the provocateur who challenges the assumptions of Pastor Bill Youngdahl, and Augustana parishioner Ray Christensen is the conflicted conscience of the film. It was nominated for an Oscar. A film that, actually two films that I intend to do a lot of writing about, and that I've already done some writing about, are The Rain People and We're Not the Jet Set, which have a relationship to each other, which I'm about to explain. In 1968, a remarkable confluence of Hollywood talent descended on Ogallala, Nebraska, of all places. Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, Bill Butler, who's a rather legendary cinematographer, Shirley Knight, James Caan, and Robert Duvall were making a small art film, the relationship road picture, The Rain People, that wended its way from the East Coast and the South to Middle America. Its last few weeks of shooting was in Ogallala. Coppola wrote and directed the picture. Lucas, who was his then protege, was an assistant who also shot a documentary about the making of the movie. Knight starred as a pregnant wife fleeing her suburban life. Caan and Duvall co-stars the men she meets along the way. While in Ogallala, Duvall became fascinated with a local ranch rodeo family, the Petersons, and he ended up coming back several times to make a documentary about them, the superb We're Not the Jet Set, which has been almost not seen for the last 35 years or more. I have a copy of it. I think one of the few existing copies, actually. I got it from Robert Duvall's then production company a few years ago. It doesn't exist anymore, the company. And I've been trying like heck to work with Film Streams and others to put together a program to accompany a story or series of stories that I want to do about this confluence of talent that ended up in Nebraska. And there's more to the story. Soon after making The Rain People, Coppola and Lucas formed Zoetrope Studio, and they helped usher in the new Hollywood. Coppola produced Lucas's first feature, THX 1138, which starred Robert Duvall. And he also produced Lucas's second feature, American Graffiti. And Duvall and Caan, as you know, had career-making roles in Coppola's The Godfather, and both actors appeared in later Coppola films. Duvall remained close to that ranch rodeo family, the Petersons, several of whom wound up as horse trainers and animal wranglers on Hollywood movies. Some of them still do that today. None of this may have happened without, you know, their experience on The Rain People, where, as I like to think of it, film history intersected with Nebraska. And I've interviewed actually everyone associated with both of those films, with the exception of George Lucas. And so I'm just dying to do something with the material. But so far, things haven't quite gelled together to find an editor and publisher to say yes. So wish me luck on that. One of the best films of the 1980s, Terms of Endearment, was partially shot in Lincoln, Nebraska. Writer-director James L. Brooks did a masterful job balancing the part soap opera, part comedy, with a powerhouse cast featuring Jack Nicholson, Shirley MacLaine, Deborah Winger, Jeff Daniels, John Lithgow, Danny DeVito, and Omaha's own Tom Wiese. The making of the film made big news here, and a byproduct of the production being here was then Governor Bob Kerry, then the dashing bachelor dating Deborah Winger. The TV miniseries America was an epic production partially shot in and around Tecumseh in the mid-1980s, and its story very much reflected the era's Cold War tensions and fears. It starred several big names, Kris Kristofferson, Robert Urich, Sam Neill, Dorian Harewood, Armin Mueller, Stahl, Ivan Dixon, Mariel Hemingway, Christine Lottie. But I never saw it, to be perfectly honest, but from what I have read about it, it sounds like it was pretty much a dud and a bore. For his directorial debut, The Indian Runner, Sean Penn chose Plattsmouth, Nebraska and environs as the primary location for an independent art film that brought together a cast of unknowns and veterans, including David Morse, Viggo Mortensen, Patricia Arquette, Dennis Hopper, Charles Bronson, and once again, Nebraska's own Sandy Dennis. Some of you may remember Omaha the movie. Omaha's Dan Mirvish and Dana Altman, along with a local cast, made the thoroughly delightful screwball comedy, which, thanks to Mirvish's genius for promotion, got seen far more widely than the average micro-budget feature. And I still talk to Dan Mirvish from time to time. He moved away. He lives in Los Angeles now, or that area, that era, and he's still very much making films. Do you remember this this film, To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar? Cast against type, the virile Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo portrayed drag queens. It was partially shot in Loma and Lincoln and Omaha. I love the fact that this unlikely but undeniably charismatic trio, along with a great supporting cast, made such an in-your-face transgender film in a state that's often less than progressive about such matters. You know, then there's the Alexander Payne set of films, four made in Nebraska to date, and sure to be more. You know, Citizen Ruth, I often say, is, to my way of thinking, his most courageous film to date. Certainly his rawest work, not necessarily his best work, but I think it's a film that deserves to be revisited. You may not remember, but he assembled quite a cast for that. Laura Dern in the lead, Mary Kay Place, Swoozie Kurtz, who's an Omaha native, by the way, Kelly Preston, Kurt Word Smith, Kenneth Mars, Tippi Hedren, Burt Reynolds, and some of the locations in Dundee where he grew up became favorite filming spots for his subsequent Omaha-made movies. And Payne's next Omaha movie, Election, gave Matthew Broderick one of the best screen roles that he's ever had and helped make the career of Reese Witherspoon. In prepping that film, Payne and casting director John Jackson discovered two locals, Nick DiAugusto and Chris Klein, and they both ended up with speaking parts, and actually Chris Klein ended up with essentially the third lead in that film. And both of those actors have gone on to enjoy very successful Hollywood careers. Where's Jack sightings became commonplace during the filming of Payne's About Schmidt, starring, of course, the incomparable Jack Nicholson. And it was the director's third film here, and he has told me and others that he felt he finally captured the essence of Omaha on screen with this picture. I still couldn't explain it, and I'm not sure he could what that even means. He's tried to me many times, and you'll find some of those explanations in my book. And then that would bring us to Nebraska. As you know, before making Nebraska and after About Schmidt, Payne left here, so to speak, to make two features outside of Nebraska, Sideways and The Descendants. In locations, of course, far different from here. But he returned to make this singular film called Nebraska with a wonderful cast, Bruce Dern, Will Forte, Bob Odenkirk, June Squibb, Stacy Keach, etc. To my way of thinking, it's a film that's going to endure. And I think we'll be talking about his Nebraska 50 years from now, a century from now. I'm not saying that we won't talk about his other films far into the distant future, but I'm pretty sure that one will be talked about for a very long time to come. There's been a number of other films of interest made here. Full Ride, For Love of Amy, which had its premiere in this very space. The aforementioned Lovely Still that Nick Fackler made with Martin Landau and Ellen Burstyn. Perhaps my favorite Omaha-made movie, and I don't claim to have seen anywhere near all of them, and I haven't, is a film that most of you probably have never heard of, Wigger. It was written and directed by UNO professor Omawale Akintunde, which is one of my favorite names. and it may be the only dramatic feature film that deals with Omaha's contemporary African-American culture and the hold that it has on some white youths. And if you've never seen it, I recommend it. You'll see North Omaha that in a way that you've never seen it before. Just like with Payne's Nebraska, you saw rural Nebraska in ways that you've never seen it before. Omaha has also been home to some premieres, as I mentioned earlier. This was perhaps the biggest. it's not a great movie, if you've ever seen it. But it, from what I can tell, it was a bona fide world premiere. And it coincided with a citywide celebration called Golden Spike Days. And I remember my parents always talking about Golden Spike Days as this very special occasion. The movie's stars, Barbara Stanwyck, Lloyd Nolan, Robert Preston, Anthony Quinn, et cetera, were all here for this this huge event, as was director Cecil B. DeMille, Paramount studio head Barney Balaban. The film premiered at three downtown theaters simultaneously, the Omaha, the Orpheum, and the Paramount. Then New York columnist Ed Sullivan covered the festivities, which drew a crowd estimated at 50,000 plus. And there were actually hundreds of thousands more in town for the Golden Spike Day. So it was a movie event on a scale that had never been seen before, and I'm pretty sure we'll never see again. And my late father, Leo M. Biga, got the task of delivering a telegram to Barbara Stanwyck's suite when she was in town for that premiere. He didn't get to meet her, though. another premiere that I didn't attend this, I certainly read about it with great interest, was On Golden Pond. It certainly was not a world premiere. Henry Fonda was too ill to attend. It was held at the Orpheum, but Jane Fonda did come. And, of course, that got a lot of attention. It wasn't very long after that she accepted the Oscar that her father won for Best Actor and presented it to him at his home. And he died not long after that. And then there's been a number of other premieres here and there. Two of them, Strategic Air Command and Wild Blue Yonder. I'm pretty sure that they happened here because of the relationship that Arthur Storrs Sr. had with Strategic Air Command. He was instrumental in getting it placed here. He had a great, strong relationship with the United States Air Force on many different levels, and he was a close friend of Curtis LeMay's. So those premieres were held in Omaha, and they were big events. It caused a big splash and parades and stars and lots of media coverage and all of that. Alexander Payne's films, especially the last several, have all had premieres here, but none of them have really been world premieres because his films generally will show somewhere else first at a film festival. But like I said, when they do open here at film streams, generally they're opening the same weekend as they do like in Los Angeles and New York. So it's a premiere of a kind. Still kind of a special deal, doing something special for the hometown folks. I've also always been interested by film figures who have visited Nebraska for one reason or another. And I recently came across a Creighton University film festival that was held in the 1960s that brought together, of all people, Otto Preminger, the great Hollywood tyrant director, who made a lot of great films, and the experimental filmmaker Stan Brakhage on the same program. I would like to have been there for that, just to see that interesting coupling. And then, of course, Alexander Payne is basically responsible for bringing a lot of great film figures here the last several years. Laura Dern, his the lead in his debut feature, Citizen Ruth, and they're good close friends. And she's been back to Omaha subsequently. Deborah Winger, Steven Soderbergh, Jane Fonda, and then in connection with Nebraska, most of the principal cast, Bruce Dern, Will Forte, June Squibb, and most recently David O. Russell. And, you know, as a journalist and as a guy who's sometimes a film journalist, you know, I'm always wanting to interview these people. And sometimes I get that opportunity and sometimes I don't. I did get to talk to David O. Russell, and that was fun. And I interviewed all of the Nebraska cast, with the exception of June Squibb. Never got to Jane Fonda, although I tried. Tried to get to Steven Soderbergh, but wasn't quite getting the cooperation that I needed. Same with Deborah Winger, but I did interview Laura Dern. A name that some of you might be familiar with, who also brings Hollywood personalities and figures here, is Bruce Crawford. Bruce is a film historian and an impresario, and he generally now presents two film revivals a year, and he's brought all sorts of interesting people here. And I've had a chance to interview most of these folks, including the late Ray Harryhausen, the great special effects artist, Janet Leigh, Patricia Neal, the director John Landis, Debbie Reynolds, Shirley Jones, Patty Duke, Tippi Hedren, most recently, with a screening of The Birds. And then, as I mentioned before, there are film artists who make their home in Nebraska, and some of them are actually very well known and have accomplished a great deal. Of course, Alexander Payne has always maintained a residence here. Then there's the aforementioned Mauro Fiore, the cinematographer, Mike Hill, the editor. There's also John Jackson, who is Alexander Payne's casting director now, for all the parts in all of his films. There's Nick Fackler, there's Omawale Akintunde, there's Dana Altman, editor, recently turned feature director, Tom Elkins, art director, Sandy Veneziano, and actor John Beasley. And there's more, too. there's also a lot of documentary filmmakers who live and work here. Omaha natives Dan Sussman and I think it's Andrew Monboquet. I have a new documentary out called Growing Cities, which some of you may be familiar with. It's now appearing on PBS stations around the country. And Omaha resident Patty Dillon has a new documentary, There Will Be No Stay, soon to play festivals and possibly to be broadcast on PBS. And I've had an opportunity to see both of these films. And Growing Cities is a good piece of work, and it's about kind of the fresh local food movement that's happening across America. And so those filmmakers really have plugged into a passion that's important to a lot of people. And There Will Be No Stay, the Patty Dillon film, is about two executioners. And the trauma that work caused them. And it's one of the best documentaries I've seen in recent years, and it's going to get a lot of attention. It's a film to watch out for. There Will Be No Stay. The film culture in Nebraska has evolved in recent years to feature more venues and events that celebrate film as an art form. Nebraska is home to two major art cinemas and the Mary Rietma Ross Media Arts Center in Lincoln and, of course, Film Streams in Omaha, as well as to historic restored theaters devoted to art films, the Midwest Theater in Scotts Bluff, the World Theater in Kearney. There's, of course, the Dundee Theater in Omaha, which we all hope will reopen someday. There's the Omaha Film Festival, which has certainly contributed to this growing film culture. There's a Jewish film festival. There are other film festivals. And I had noted recently that UNO's Religious Studies Program and Journal of Film and Religion hosted an international conference on film and religion in Omaha last year, I believe it was. Another figure that may be known by some of you as former network television executive and screenwriter Lou Hunter, whose Screenwriting 434 book is a Bible for some. He conducts a screenwriting colony twice a year in Superior, Nebraska. and I've attended that, not as an aspiring screenwriter, but as a journalist, reporting on his colony. He also teaches a famous screenwriting class at UCLA, and his students have included people like Francis Coppola and Alexander Payne, etc. Omaha native Thomas Schatz, also from a very prominent Omaha family, is a noted film scholar and heads the University of Texas at Austin Film Studies program. And Wheeler Winston Dixon is University of Nebraska Lincoln film studies professor who writes nationally on film history, theory, and criticism. And so I just sprinkled in those names, and what they do is just further examples of people from here doing interesting things related to film. And so my opinion is that for a state that's given and gotten so much from cinema, I find it odd that there's relatively little recognition of this connection and legacy. And that's why I intend to create a website, a book, who knows, maybe a documentary, that attempt to pull all this together. It's just a little-known heritage that has had and continues to have a cultural and economic educational impact on the state and well beyond. As time goes by, Nebraska's film heritage only continues to expand as more and more folks from here add their contribution. The story of Nebraska's film heritage, hopefully, I've demonstrated, is much larger than the dozen or so names we can usually recite. It's much larger than Alexander Payne. It's quite literally hundreds of individuals and projects. So, thanks.
You've been listening to a program from the Durham Museum Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Leo Biga, author of Alexander Payne, His Journey in Film, and co-editor of Memories of the Jewish Midwest, Mom-and-Pop Grocery Stores. The topic of his talk was Nebraska's Film Heritage. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, February 17, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jessica Brummer, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the Durham Museum, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 500 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.